Welcome back to Lifeline. I'm delighted to say I'm joined in the studio, my first guest in over 2 years, live with Ken Kirwan. Good morning to you, Ken.
Good morning, Debbie. How are things?
Oh, great. Great to have you in.
Great to be here.
See you. And we haven't seen you for over 2 years.
Yeah, a lot has changed.
A lot has changed. A lot has changed. And last time I think you were in, I think it was myself and Jerry Cooley were talking to you about a gig you were doing. God, that must be over now, 2 years, nearly 3 years. You were doing a big gig anyway. I think it might have been for a charity or something.
Yeah.
We had such a laugh there. But all this changed now. Tell us what's been happening in your life.
Okay, obviously, look, we have to mention the big C, COVID-19, and that kicked in. So obviously all the gigs went, and I'm a graphic designer during the day, and we were allowed work from home. So for me, COVID was a positive thing. I know this sounds mad to say. Maybe not later on, but it was a positive thing in the sense that it taught me to slow down, because I was going for 10 years with the singing, and I was just 9-to-5 job, gigging at the weekends and nearly experiencing burnout. So I just slowed down then, and so much so, I have knocked it on the head for the foreseeable future. Just for a year anyway, just to kind of definitely
give yourself a break. Apart from all that, like, you spoke many a time here about you had a kidney transplant. Mm. So you went through that, you worked full time and you did the gigging, which you said nearly every weekend even. Yeah. And it got to the stage where you were kind of getting a bit burnt out and then COVID hit. And then that kind of, I think a lot of people kind of gave them like what am I doing with my life? And you know, and as with some, in some ways, it's good to kind of get you grounded and where you go from here.
So I never thought I'd use that expression. You know, when someone says, I'm finding myself.
Yeah.
But I did find myself through COVID, because, as I said, like, Amelia, my daughter, is now 9, my youngest daughter, and she's 9. And, like, for 7 years of her life, like, all she was seeing was, you know, daddy collecting her from the creche for 2 hours, then she's going to bed, and then at the weekend, I'm out gigging, and it's just not right, you know. For me it wasn't, but like, the way I'd liken it to was, it was a train you couldn't get off, because you'd say, right, I'm not going to take any more gigs in. Then you get a phone call and it'd be like, there's a corporate down in Kerry and they're paying this, or this fella's at it, and you know what I mean, and you'd be kind of go, right, I'll take it then. And then when COVID hit, obviously everything stopped, so I just built up, I've always been a graphic designer, I built up that business in the background then, which was quite busy through lockdown. I was doing all these masks, you know, the customised masks with the logo for companies and stuff like that.
Yeah, so you kind of got yourself busy doing something else.
And then that just kind of blossomed, and I said to myself, do you know what? I can do this from home as well as my day job, you know. I don't have to leave the house. That's not to say I'm a recluse now, but I'm not a musician. I turned into a recluse. No, I just meant that I was able to go out for my runs in the morning, go back, work a day, collect her from school, go back, work more, and then finish. And I'm still around for her, you know what I mean?
And you have that great relationship with your daughter, Millie. Ah, she's lovely. She's sitting in the studio too.
Good morning, Millie.
And you're a very close relationship with her. And that probably, when COVID came, you kind of realised what was important in your life.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was.
What is the most important thing, and family and
we've always had a good one. Like, my wife is very supportive in that regards. And, you know, my wife, Jenny, and has always been very supportive. But I think it was a case of having to be, because I was gigging, you know what I mean, like, unless she was going to sit at home going, you're not going to gig, you know, but she wasn't, and it just wasn't fair, because then you tried to have some kind of a social life on a Sunday then, and you might stay for a pint, or, you know, and the little one would be going, you're not coming home, dad, and I, you know, you feel terrible.
Yeah,
that wouldn't be every week now, do you know what I mean? But it was just, it wasn't life conducive to having a young kid, and you know, so
something had to give, and like, COVID just kind of made you realise that this was something that things had to change. So through COVID, you came up with this idea that you wanted to write your own book.
Well, I'd started writing it actually in 2017, but what happened was, because I was working and gigging, it was being done very sporadically. So I'd go through a burst of about 3 weeks, going over to a hotel after work, you know, doing a few pages or whatever, but then I'd leave it for months on end, and then I'd go back to it, and, you know, so basically with COVID then, as I said, I was working from home, so I had more time there that I could do an extra hour after my day job, and kept coming up with stuff and coming up with stuff. The one thing about writing a book, and I'll say this now, and even my mum said it yesterday, you have to have a very good memory. She says, I'm on chapter 11, son. She said, I don't want to put it down. My God, how did you remember all this stuff? Because I remembered stuff from childhood and everything.
Really?
But I have a vivid memory, which is weird, like, you know, but
But what inspired you to write the book in the first place?
I think what it was, is that even through dialysis, I always said that I was never going to let that define
me. Maybe we'll go back a bit. If people are just tuning in this morning, tell us a little bit how all that started, your dialysis and your transplant.
So basically, when I was 24, 25, no major hassle going on. Like, but basically, I started getting this kind of dull pain in my back. I just thought it was strange, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, but then eventually it got worse and worse. And after my oldest girl was born, she was born when I was 23 in 1998. And that was going on for about 2 years. And then one night in particular, I was in my mum's house. I was after having my dinner and came home from work. I had my dinner and I just got this terrible pain in my abdomen. And I was saying to myself, right, what's this now, you know? And it got worse and it was so bad. I was up in her bed just kind of in unimaginable pain.
Really? Just
so I said, look, we go down to Bowman, but I thought it was, I'm going to be honest, I thought it was constipation because I hadn't gone to the loo for a day or two, right?
Okay.
So I said, we'll just go down to Bowman, you might be able to give me something. So anyway, there for about 13 hours and eventually a fresh kind of doctor came on the next morning. He said, look, we'll put you in for a scan, which I don't know why they didn't do it the night before, but they did it. And he just came back to me and he said, right, we have to have a chat. And he got an A4 page out, drew two circles, got a black marker and just kind of dotted it. And he says, that's your kidneys. And I was like looking at him going, what do you mean? And he says, you have polycystic kidneys. But he sent me away and he said, you know, you can take this medication. It's not life threatening. So, of course, I was 25. You know, I was in a good job. And I was going off drinking at the weekend, smoking my head off and stuff. Yeah, and it just got worse and worse and worse. And then I started, they used to rupture every time. So there was a bit of a joke going on. It was like a male menstrual cycle because I passed blood for about 4 days and I'd be grumpy at the end of the month.
Oh, God.
I'm sure the family would say you're a grumpy more through the month as well. But it was disgusting because it was pure blood.
Yeah.
And it was quite embarrassing if you were going to the loo in someone else's house. You'd nearly have to be like a forensic to make sure that there was nothing left, you know. And it was horrible. And you just felt weak. And then it just went worse and worse. It's renal failure you're going through. Yeah, and then the fatigue. I remember I bought my own house then when I was 30. And I used to come home and you'd say, no, I'm not domestic. Well, I am more better now, but I wasn't then. And I'd come in, put a wash on, make me dinner, have me dinner, and then I'd say, oh, sure, I'll just lie down for about half an hour. I'd wake up at 2 a.m.
You were just sunked.
Completely disordered. But I didn't know because they hadn't told me what the symptoms were.
Was this hereditary or anything?
No,
did you develop it?
Great question, that, because it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
But my mum didn't have it and my dad didn't have it. So it was just a freak thing with me, really. And in touch and wood that I hope the two girls don't get it. Do you know what I mean? So.
And can they be tested? So a test you can do?
I'm sure, not really, to be honest, no. There's not really, like, because it's just, I suppose you'd probably know if, like, you were regularly going to the loo or anything like that, but no, Amelia lives with me and you know what I mean? So she's nothing different. Yeah. She's not tired. She's great energy. Fatigue would be one thing, but sure, look, I wasn't even diagnosed until I was 25.
You can put that down to go late nights and everything. So we got to the stage where you were getting quite bad every month. So did they give you the option? Did they say, like, this is going to have to happen?
Well, it was only actually later on they started speaking, when they kind of knew, right, this is renal failure going through now. Because when he sent me away that night going, this is not life threatening, I just went on and had a life, you know what I mean? But all of a sudden then I was in renal failure and they were kind of going, you know, you're going to have to go on dialysis. I was like, yeah, whatever. That was so far removed from where I was, you know. And you go into, obviously, a state of denial as well. You don't want to be at this age, because I had a job in Dell earning big money. I had my own house. I had a nice little sports car sitting outside and I thought I was the cheese. And
yeah,
I was going, I don't want this thing to be ruining my life now. I've finally got where I wanted to be, job-wise, and, you know. So eventually then, they just got worse, worse, worse. And then it came to a head. This is actually, it's all in the book, but it came to a head when two of my friends were getting married. I think one was in June and July. And both of them, the headaches that you experience with, so blood pressure, basically, sorry, is a big thing with kidney sufferers. And your blood pressure can be really, really high.
Right.
So mine was sky high, but it was giving me these chronic headaches. So at my friend's wedding, I think it was in the June of that year, I took 24 paracetamol in a day, trying to curb
the headache.
And then my other pal got married the following month, and then it was worse again. And then 2 days after that wedding, I was down on bone mount starting dialysis.
Really?
Or sorry, 2 days after I went down to the doctor, and 2 days after that,
you were in bone
was my first session. Yeah.
So you started dialysis, and then when did they mention a transplant?
So basically, it went on. Thankfully, like, you could be on dialysis for years. You could be on dialysis for 10 years. So when I started doing it, still in denial, still going out drinking at the weekend. Now basically, what dialysis is, the process is you have to do it 3 nights a week for 4 hours. Gosh. And when you go in, because I was still going out at the weekend, the funny thing is, see the likes of that now? That's a cup of coffee I'm holding up. That would have been probably half your liquid intake when you have a kidney. And you wouldn't be drinking coffee, it'd be water you'd be drinking. You were only allowed 1 litre per day.
Holy.
Sure, I was going out at the weekends and I was drinking many pints, do you know what I mean? And I'd go in then, they'd say, how many litres of fluid do you want us to take off? And I'd say, I'd take 5 off. You'd be going out like a prune, you know what I mean? But I was fighting against the system. It's like a diabetic eating chocolate.
Yeah.
You know, checking their bloods to see if it goes high. So eventually then, I just had to cut myself on. I said, if I have any chance of getting a kidney here,
I have to look after myself.
So I just started, I was going to the gym, I was eating right, and I was watching my liquid intake. And you have an evaluation then with a doctor after a few months, a fella called David Hickey. And I went in and he just said to me, he says, you're going to have a kidney within a year. And I was like, looking at him going, how would you even say that? That's a terrible thing to say to someone, giving them false hope. And he just said, no, he says, the pallor, your skin pallor, the colour of your eyes, you know, I can tell you're looking after yourself. And because I used to go to the gym twice a week, or
You changed your whole life around, do you know what I mean? Yourself, yeah.
And so 7 months later then, I'm on stage in doing the Christmas shows with the band called the Irish Rat Pack at the time. And it was when I'd only kind of started getting into the singing. Mm. And I was on the stage in Fitzpatrick's in Killiney, and I was doing dialysis. The process is, talk about tiring. I get off stage at 12 o'clock. I drive home to my mum's. So I rented out my own house in Rathdowes for 2 years while I was doing.
And you lived in your mum.
And basically then I'd get into the bed at 1 o'clock, get out, back out of the bed at 3:30, stick a tracksuit on, drive down to Beaumont and do my dialysis. And that was the night then, the 7th of December, or 29th of December 2007. And I was in the bed and my phone started ringing, private number. And I never answer private numbers, even today I don't. And so I let it ring off, and then there was a message on it, and it was like, hi, this is Regina from the transplant unit, whatever. If you don't answer this phone, the police pulled up outside my mum's house. And I've never been in trouble with the police. My dad is a detective, you know.
Awesome.
Never been in trouble with the police in my life. And the police pulled up, where's your son? And she's like, he's down in Beaumont, you know what I mean? Yeah, he's down in Beaumont doing dialysis, you know. And but your woman is on the phone, Regina, saying, like, if you don't answer this phone,
oh, for God's
like,
sake,
this kidney be gone. So I'm like,
trying to get it.
But like, this is like 4:30 in the morning, you find out, and the nurses were going, like, are you not happy? You're not excited? And I'm like looking around going, guys, that guy beside me here is on dialysis 10 years. I'm hardly going to start doing cartwheels now. Like, inside.
And why? Because you had been looking after yourself and you were
I'll tell you what it was. It's down to a lot of things with the kidney. So basically it has to match in many forms.
All right. It's not a simple thing.
My advantage was that I've a rare blood, don't ask me what it is, but I've a rare blood type.
Yeah.
And I used to think that would go against, but they said, no, Ken, so there's just smaller amount of people in your pool. So if something comes up, you have a better chance of getting a kidney.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You would think of the opposite.
I couldn't believe it now.
So you got your kidney transplant in 2007?
Yeah, 29th of December.
Everything went okay. You can reject a kidney, is that right? Yeah, you can.
Well, God love them. There was 25 transplants done that December, and 24 of them were deaths. Only one live donor.
Really?
And God love them. The guy that got it, excuse me, he was from, I think his name was something, he was from Australia. I think his name was Brad or something like that, you know. Obviously a surfer. I remember the guy, big tanned guy, you know. Everybody would want to look like this guy, you know. And his dad travelled over from Australia, and he was his live donor.
Brilliant.
And then it rejected.
Oh, no.
Yeah, now I don't know what happened to him after, but So yeah, just got it. Now obviously you go through a stage of convalescence. Well, obviously when you get the kidney, you're going, I think I was in hospital for about 13 days after.
Can you live with one kidney?
Oh, you can. Like, well, basically, technically, I have three kidneys, right? But only one of them is working. So like, right, I'm okay. working off one, but there's many people just born
just
with one kidney.
One kidney, yeah. I never realised that.
Mm.
So you got the transplant. It wasn't rejected. And
no, thank God.
Everything was going okay.
Everything was great. I got a job. My job in Dell at 22 was got let go, and all of a sudden, now we were, you know, looked after. I'd put a few bob away anyway, so I was grand for a few months. You know what I mean? But I kind of said to myself, look, I needed to get a job. You know, so got the job, and the job was just a disaster. And basically, I wasn't regimental enough with my medication. I didn't realise how much of a lifeline they were.
Okay.
And the kidney almost rejected, and I nearly lost it. And that was that was the harshest lesson I've ever learned in my life. Excuse me, sorry, I had a coffee this morning. But so I ended up in hospital. They pumped me full of steroids. I think I was in for about 4 or 5 days, and like, my doctor just came in and said, look, you can't let this happen again. This is your lifeline. Like, I'm on between 22 and 24 tablets a day
every
for
day.
Life.
Every day, for life, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
And
I
how
don't
are you
mind.
Finding that? Do you get used to it?
Yeah, geez,
it's
like,
keeping you alive, isn't it?
You whack them in the morning, you whack them before you go to bed.
Yeah,
that's the way it is, you know. I'm a good sleeper, and I'm usually in bed by 10 o'clock every night as well, bar the weekends. Now, I don't know what the weekends probably now, because of the COVID hours. I can't do the late nights anymore.
Well, we're back to normal now, so. But you still have to watch yourself.
Yeah,
so,
you do.
Okay, so you got the kidney, you're on the your tablets every day, and your life is getting back. You were performing again, and things were okay.
Just like, I'll be honest with you, like, and if anybody will obviously move on to the book, but the book is basically based on pre, during, and post transplant, and the life that I've led. And I'm going to be honest, I've had a brilliant life.
Yeah.
So, touch wood.
You're a very positive person. Anyway, did that just come about because of what you've gone through? You're always a positive person.
Okay, so I always strived. I never thought that. I know this is, I don't want this to come across cocky, but I always thought when I was growing up, I didn't want to settle for what life gave me. I always wanted to strive for better.
Mm.
So through the singing, through writing a book, through doing something else, through, you know, so I always wanted to do something that I can kind of look back on and have some kind of a legacy or whatever. So, the positivity, sometimes, and I said this in the book as well, sometimes they say the traits of the donor you can actually get. So I don't know.
Would
have been a very
on.
Positive Peter. I tell you what it is. I think it's because I got such a second chance at life. My attitude is, my mortgage is paid, my bills are paid, there's food on the table, I've a warm house, roof over my head, and everybody's looked after around me. That, past anything else, is a happy life.
It's important in life, isn't it?
I've no drama in my life. Yeah. I don't, you know, like, she comes from a very loving home, Amelia, and, you know, it's just, my mum is still alive, my dad is gone, mum is still alive, she's an amazing woman. She's my inspiration. And my attitude is just, why wouldn't I be?
Yeah.
You know, I've had so many good things in my life happen to me. Obviously, I've created a lot of them to happen, but they have happened, and I'm very thankful for it.
Well, that's good. That's a great attitude. Do you ever find out who?
No,
you don't.
Unfortunately,
no.
You can.
Are you allowed to? Or no?
I think it's frowned upon. See, what I would love to do is I would love to anonymously send them a book to kind of say, look, I just want you to know that I've honoured your son or your daughter's kidney, and that I'm still here 14 years later, still, you know, training in the gym 3-4 days a week and going out for me runs
having
and me walks
life.
And having an actually active life. That's the tagline of the book, is my healthy, happy, active life since transplantation. And it's just to get across to people that, like, you don't have to let this thing define you. You know what I mean? There's certain things you can't do, and there's certain things that you shouldn't do, but other than that, like, it's a brilliant life to have, you know.
So when COVID hit, okay, you had this idea writing the book, COVID hit. Were you, like all of us, I was terrified. I have asthma, so I have an underlying condition as well. I was terrified of picking up COVID. And we were all afraid. Everyone, when COVID came for us, we were very afraid. But if you have an immune system that's a little bit probably weak.
Mm.
So you got through COVID, you got through the all right at the beginning.
2 years of it.
2 years of it. Mad. So what happened then? How did you get COVID? Just gone in November, was
it? Yeah, it was funny because like we did everything we were supposed to do. Now, this will be my first shout out to the Friday Club, okay? So basically, the lads, I think one or two of them are listening. Basically, when the lockdowns eased, I started going out for a pint on a Friday. Like, well, you were allowed to, you know what I mean? I love just at the end of the week having my shower. I don't mean just that shower, but like,
once
I love
shower.
On a Friday just having the shower and saying, right, I'm going to go, I'll be up there for 2 hours and come back down. So we'd go up, talk about the week. Everybody's doing great for themselves and their businesses and stuff. And we'd have a few scoops. And it was great just for my mental health as well. Yeah. Never got it then, right? We stayed in our own little bubble. We used to go out to the beach, down to the forest for walks and stuff like that. But very much like when we were to stay in, we stayed in. We'd have our little takeaway on a Saturday night. And I was working from home. Jenny was working from home as well. And it was grand, you know. Yeah. But it was actually the day of Halloween. Now, I was after having a cold for about 6 weeks and the thing just wouldn't shift. So for whatever reason, I booked a PCR test for the day after Halloween.
Yeah.
And on Halloween day, we got up that morning. Remember, we went to Donabay Beach for a walk. And I was in great fettle. I jogged most of the walk we went on. But when we came home, I just got this foggy, ill feeling over me, right? And I was kind of saying to Jen, how the hell have I not picked this up? And we had a thing planned for the kids where we all dressed up, but I was Batman and whoever else.
Yeah.
But I could feel this coming on. And I thought, yeah, this is weird. I've never felt this before. So I says, look, I let it go. It got worse through the day. But I didn't honestly think that it was COVID because I'd had two tests during that 6 weeks. Excuse me. And I was negative. And then the following day, got the PCR done. I also went down to the doctor to see if I could get steroids because the chest infection just wasn't moving. And then following day, I got the results. And we worked it out. So we said, right, okay, I'll be grand the following Wednesday, say. And I went downhill. Oh. And I lost, I think it was a stone and 2 pounds in a week.
Go away.
Couldn't eat. I was sleeping about 16 hours a day. I had a fever. So you were literally just dozing, coming out of it. But the scary probably part for Amelia and Jen at home was that I'd lost so much weight in such a short space of time because I'm a big enough guy, do you know what I mean? And you can notice that. And it got to the point where I'd get up out of the bed. I stayed in Amelia's room. And even going to the loo was an epic task. Like, wow, I was so weak. So Jen begged me on the Wednesday, which was ironically supposed to be my day coming out of isolation. And Jen begged me on the Wednesday. I said, look, I'm actually 2 weeks today. I can't.
How was your breathing at that stage?
The breathing was actually fine, believe it or not. But I think because of my kidney, I was more worried about that than anything else. Because I was kind of saying, right, this is, I feel like
crap.
Okay, I can say that, can I?
Yeah, yeah.
I was going to say the other word. But I feel like crap, but, you know, I should be grand. But I couldn't eat. Like, eating was like, that's why I lost so much weight, was because eating was like eating rocks.
Really?
It just could not.
Did your taste and your smell go?
Oh my God, yeah. Yeah, like, by that stage, I hadn't. But, so on the Thursday, we rang an ambulance and straight down to, oh, brutal. Went down to Beaumont, put on a ventilator straight away, 24
hours. And you were on a vent. That's why, you know, I kind of ask, if you weren't feeling breathless, why were you putting a ventilator?
It's just that,
they must know by your oxygen levels, is it, or something?
What's that word?
Respiratory.
Thank you. Yeah. It's a respiratory disease.
Yeah.
So basically, I probably didn't realise my breathing was laboured.
Yeah.
But, you know, and basically, so they put it on me. But I put this picture up on Instagram, and like people were just going, oh my God, like, what's the story here?
Off.
It was just like, you know, I hadn't shaved obviously in about a week and a half. And
what was going through your mind at this stage? Were you frightened?
Do you know what the gas thing is? I was frightened, but because of what I've gone through before in my life, I just knew. I knew eventually I'd be okay, but I have to get through this time. But it actually got worse when I got down to the ward. So you're brought into this kind of holding area to assess you, and they put you on an antibiotic, take your blood pressure, everything. And then I was saying, I'm not going to be stuck in this trolley but they brought me down to a ward, and when I went in, there was nobody in the ward, and I felt the worst part of it was the dry retching, whatever it's called.
No.
Because I had this cough And that was probably the lungs. Actually, I had the cough, and but nothing was coming up. So you literally would be sitting at the side of the bed, and I was getting weaker and weaker, and I lost more weight when I went into hospital then. So it was just horrible. And I remember one night in particular, it just this vivid memory of two nurses at the side of the bed, two of them putting these wet face cloths all over my torso. I had no top on, just my bottoms on, and another one's holding the bucket. So there's three nurses around my bed. Like, by this stage, other people had come into the ward, and like, it was like a spectator sport. They were just standing around. I'm like looking at them going, he's all right, lads, yeah, you know. And but like, they were all going, he needs to go to ICU. Like, I just was dying sick. Yeah. Absolutely. So he came in, my doctor came in to me, and he said to me, look, Ken, you're going to be here another 7 to 10 days. He says, like, your temperature is at 41. Like, 42 is fatal. So, but again, I didn't know any of this. So, like, I'm probably not
better off not knowing.
See, I don't Google stuff. Yeah. So, what I'm saying is that, like, I wouldn't have been on going, am I going to die?
I know what I mean.
So, it went to 41, as I said. They were coming in, taking it. And then, you know, I would never be disrespectful to anybody in that position. I've always been a gentleman to people in hospitals because they're doing an amazing job. But they were giving me this stuff, and then it would drop a little bit my temp, and then it would go back up, and I kind of got, so one day I didn't lose it, but I was kind of going, look lads, we need to do something different here.
It's not working,
because this is just a merry-go-round. Yeah. It's going up, it's going down, you know. And then I'm a firm believer in mindset, right? So firm believer in positivity and mindset. And that little beauty inside sent me a card, and she said to me, dear Dada, I would love you to be here for the Late Late Toy Show, which was the following Friday, right? Yeah. Now, at this stage, for the 2 days before, and I'm not afraid to admit it, I didn't shower, I didn't shave, I completely went into a miserable state, which I never do. I'm never not positive. And I was just kind of feeling sorry for myself. And that day, after I got the car, oh no, they brought me stuff, or sorry, they sent me stuff in, clean jammies and whatever else. And Jen says to me, did you get your card? And I was like, no, didn't see any card. So there's a card for Millie. So I put my hand in the thing and I read it. And I says, right, feck this. I says, I have to change something here. So I went in, had a shower, put on my clean jammies, had a shave. I even put aftershave on. My mate, the fella that was in the bed across me, was going, where are you? Like, you know. And I just said, you know what, mindset. And I tell you now, I'm not saying it's probably coincidental, but I believe in that little woman there. And my temperature started to drop that weekend, and that was like, he'd come in to me on the Wednesday and said, you're going to be here another 7 to 10 days. So I worked it out, right, well, maybe I will go home from the toy show. So that was the Friday. So the whole weekend it went from 41, 38, 36. And Doc came in on Monday, and they obviously they monitored you the whole time. And but again, when I started to feel marginally better, I started walking up and down the thing. Now before that I couldn't even breathe. Couldn't breathe.
It must have been so scary.
So we'd walk up and down, do little laps of the ward or whatever, because you couldn't go out. It was a COVID ward. Nobody could come in. So it was quite a lonely existence.
That's the worst thing, is like, you see nobody. That's the most frightening thing. None of your family are there with you.
You do video calls, but it's not the same. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And like, every time I'd ring her, like, you know, the little one, she'd have a little sad face. And she'd be,
that'd make you upset as well.
So I had a book there. I was plowing through that. I think I read two books while I was in there. Then obviously I had my own business, so I was doing stuff on my phone that I was able to do. And so like, I had other stuff to occupy my mind. And when I started to feel marginally better, I kind of said, right, we're getting out of here. Do you know what I mean? Until then I was in the hands of the gods. But once I felt better, I said, right, we'll work towards. But I still had resigned myself to the fact that I wasn't getting out until the following Friday. So when he came in the Monday and blah blah blah, had a chat with me that morning, how do you feel? Jeez, I feel great. And people in the ward were going, you're like a different man.
That's mad.
You know, it's mad.
It was
scary.
Mind over matter. I can work a lot of time. I think if you are in that kind of frame of mind where I'm going to do it, and it can kind of give you, I know sometimes maybe you're saying it would have probably came down eventually anyway, but I'm glad you did and you got home to see the toy show. So the book then?
The book, yeah. So basically, just as I said, you know, it was being written very sporadically. Started 2007. You asked me earlier on why I wrote it. I think the reason is I have to go back to the hospital every 3 months, and I have done for the last 14 years. Now, when you have your transplant, you have to go every day for 2 weeks, so you get your dressings changed and stuff like that. But after then, after you're deemed kind of well enough, every 3 months. And I was meeting people that had been transplanted with me, and you'd go, you'd meet them, and I'd bound into the hospital and probably come from the gym, and you'd be chatting to them, and like, they were very kind of down in themselves, and oh no, I haven't been out in a year, and I'd never have a drink, and
really?
I'm probably with the smell of drink off my breath from the night before. Like, now I only drink once a week, like, but I wouldn't drink much, you know, like, obviously my levels are always spot on, so I can't be doing anything wrong. But I just kind of said to my life, I said to myself, like, I think these people are making themselves more sick. You know, I know they were trying to be careful, but that wasn't my attitude. My attitude is, no, hold on a second here, I'm going to do anything I can within reason. And I've done just tons of stuff, like, you know what I mean, between running charity 5Ks, 10Ks to...
You keep yourself really fit,
yeah,
don't you?
Yeah, I try my best anyway.
And so this is all in the book, right? So you've come to... the subject of mostly in the book is about the transplant, is it? Or is it about your whole life?
It's really about my whole life. It starts off kind of when I was young. And it just... Obviously, like I was, you know, saying to people, you can't really go, bang, I'm on dialysis, you know? So it's obviously about having my oldest girl at 23. And 2 years after that, experiencing these dull pains and stuff like that, and then obviously going through the sickness, as I was saying earlier on about the dull pains and stuff that, and the weddings or whatever, then obviously coming to the dialysis, then the operation, going through the convalescence of that. It's just basically how I managed everything physically, emotionally, you know, psychologically, because you do psychological tests even before you get your transplant, because it can just get into your head, even dialysis can, but I never let it.
Yeah.
So I think even before I got the kidney, I was trying to adapt a positive mindset. So it's really just how amazing a life you can have after. You don't have to sit at home. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, you can have
like
a life
I do
too.
Non-contact boxing and Thai boxing now as well, which is animal stuff. Do you know what I mean? Now, obviously, I don't fight or I don't spar, but I do the training part of it. But like, that'd be unheard of with some people. Now, don't get me wrong, my story is not unique in the sense that I'm not the first post-kidney transplant recipient that doesn't do stuff. Like, there's people running marathons and stuff, but it's my personal story.
It's your personal story. And did you learn anything while writing this book, anything more about yourself that, you know, sometimes when you're writing, I suppose, memories and stuff, does that come? Did you learn anything while you were writing the book?
Well, do you know what I got? Funny enough, yesterday, my mum sent me a message. I dropped my mum down. I got a test copy. I bought a test copy myself to see what people other, because it's up on Amazon and other websites now as well. And it came in the door and I had a look at it. But I brought it down to my mum. I said, this is your copy. You know what I mean? Mm. And she said, like, I insist on paying for it. And I said, no, mum. You know, so. But I got a text off her later on. I didn't think she'd start. And she says, my mum's a big reader, you know. She says, I'm on chapter 11, son.
Already?
Yeah, she says, I'm on chapter 11. She says, I don't want to put it down. Extremely well written. She says, I can't believe you remembered everything. Some of it brought a tear to my eye because I spoke with my dad and, you know.
Yeah, you seem to be close to your dad as well. Was he a singer?
Not all his life I wasn't. Believe me, we used to fight like cats and dogs. But in the later years, when I started gigging
all,
and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very close to my mum now. I always was, to be honest. And still am to this day. Like, I still go down to her every week. And we've a great, I was only down with her yesterday, we have a great relationship. She's
that's
gas.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
That's great, yeah.
But no, so like, you do find a lot out about yourself. You do. It was a great experience and quite therapeutic putting it back down onto paper, so to speak. And then the best feeling was just going through the whole editing process, and obviously I've self published it. And but it, like, as I said,
did you do everything yourself? Did you edit
everything?
Did
no, I didn't edit it. I got a girl in to edit it.
Yeah.
She knows who she is because she doesn't want me to mention her name. So she knows who she is, and she did a fantastic job. So thank you. So she did the editing part, because basically what I said to her was, look, I know how to write a book, but I wrote it the way I speak.
Yeah.
So I'm not grammatically trained.
Yeah.
To a point, obviously, being a graphic designer, you are.
Yeah.
But there's certain ways, you know, commas and this, that, and the other. So I had to get her in to do that. But I designed it. I self-published it, you know. I did everything else myself.
Brilliant. So in total, how long did it take you to do the book?
Well, 5 years, really.
Five years.
So like, it's gone to. I sent it. This girl was doing it kind of as a kind of nixer for me in her own time, if you get me drift. So, the editing took a little bit longer, but it was grand because I kept saying to her, "Look, don't be worrying. I was planning to have it ready for Christmas, and then I got COVID, so I hadn't finished it at that stage, and then I put the COVID chapter into the book.
Great. So it's yeah. all included.
Yeah, it's all
Brilliant.
Included. Yeah.
So it's called Anything Is Possible, My yeah. Kidney Transplant Story.
Yeah.
Is it on sale in any of the bookshops around?
No, I'll tell you why. Basically, I'm only getting the first print run of the books this week. And Great. That's when I'll start doing the promo. It's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble and Book Depository. It's also available on my website, littlepoppymedia.com.
So if people want to look up your website, it's littlepoppymedia.com.
That's okay. probably the best way to get it, because you'll probably get it the quickest through yeah. my own website.
And it looks really, really good. Your photo's lovely on it as well. Very healthy.
We did, no, do you know what? We did a photo shoot. I got my pal Brian Nutter to do it. And, you know, he's a real fashion photographer and hair photographer. And he's doing, no, I want you to do this and I want you. And I said, listen, we're going to do it my way and then we'll do your way as well. But I says, I'm going to pick it at the end of the day. I said, yeah. you know, he wanted me to do a whole scowl on the cover. And I said, well, I can't really do a scowl. This is a positive story.
A positive. And yeah. you look great. Well, listen, Ken, we could talk for ages. The time's just gone by. Thanks a million for coming in. And once again, the book is called Anything Is Possible. It's available on your own website,
littlepoppymedia.com. Can I just give someone else a shout out?
Yeah.
Just, I would like to say thank you to the Grafton Barber, two friends of mine, Connor and Hughie McAllister. They've allowed me to advertise. They have 50 barbers all over the country and they've allowed me to advertise in all their digital
Brilliant.
Media. So thanks, lads.
Okay, and it's on sale now. So
yeah, on sale
that'd
now.
Be the quickest way to get it, littlepoppymedia.com.
Yeah.
Now, can we be talking to you again really soon? Because, as I said, you've been in so many times and as you're the first guest that I've had in over 2 years, so it's brilliant.
Delighted.
So hopefully you'll be in again soon. And
hopefully,
maybe
yeah.
Maybe your next book. Is this finished now? Is this just a once off?
I know, I think there's definitely a book in me, but the next book might be about the 90s. And that might be
that's a story
that might
itself,
be a little
yeah.
bit more. There'll be a lot of non-disclosure agreements at that one.
Brilliant. Thanks once again, Ken.
Thanks for having me, Debbie. Yep. See you later.